This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, as you might have just heard in the announcement there. And we talk about fishing, hunting, and the great outdoors. And we welcome your phone calls during the next 2 hours. And I don't know if we'll have a guest show up or not. We've invited a couple folks to come in. We'll see. But we're at 410 WCBM 680. That's our phone number, 410 WCBM 680. Now, numerically, for those who are alphabetically challenged, it is 410-922-6680. Now, if you live outside the Baltimore area, let's say you live on the Eastern Shore or Frederick or out in that area where you're outside of the immediate 410 area code, you know, Mount Airy is even 301, I believe, you can certainly reach us inside Maryland on 1-800-WCBM-680, 1-800-922-6680. A lot going on this week. A lot going on this week. A lot of gun issues going on this week. Of course, in the aftermath of the horrific shooting in Aurora, Colorado, you know, everybody on the anti-gun side is calling for tighter gun controls, as if that would have stopped this tragedy. United Nations was trying to put together a gun control treaty for the world, which did not happen, by the way. That's a bit of good news. The conference on the United Nations Arms Treaty has broken down and will not report a draft treaty to the member nations. Will not report a draft treaty. That whole scenario, that whole procedure was ended yesterday, and so there we are. But first of all, let's talk to one of my favorite callers, Kirk in Baltimore, Maryland. How are you, Kirk?
I'm hanging in there.
I'm glad to hear it.
I have a couple of questions for you.
Yes, sir.
Just wanted to get your opinion.
I'll try.
Talk with a lot of guys over the years, and they some have the opinion that if you want to catch big fish, you have to use big bait, big lures.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found that being laid up now, I look at the fish on the wall, and I remember back because each one is special to me. And every single fish I've taken over the years in freshwater,
mm-hmm.
have always been on a small lure. I mean, eighth of an ounce of the Tony, Super Duper,
yep.
Small Meps, that kind of thing. They always come unexpectedly. I mean, it's just they show up, just boom, they're there when you're casting for crappie or bluegill or whatever, and they show up. This hasn't been not the same for saltwater, because when we fish in a tournament and blue marlin and vile, we always put one big bait out for them and that kind of thing. But
sure.
Have you found the same thing to be true for freshwater, or do you subscribe to big bait, big fish?
No, here's what I think. I think that all fish that will strike a lure are predatory. Fish eat fish. Yeah, there's not many fish that don't eat other fish. When you're fishing for small fish, you're throwing a lure out there that imitates a wounded bait fish. The big fish are always hanging around the little fish, waiting for an opportunity. How many times have you heard, or how many times have you seen a smaller fish be attacked by a larger fish? You know, you get a reel and a white perch and a bluefish hits it, or a striped bass hits it, or something like that. Same thing in freshwater. If you are in the area where there are big fish, and you present an opportunity of that imitation of a wounded bait fish or a bait fish that may look a little bit different, swim a little bit different, be more attractive. No fisherman can reel a lure faster than a fish can swim. So you toss your bait out there. You may be fishing for crappie with an eighth of an ounce, something or another. And all of a sudden you throw it out there and you've thrown the cast and the bait is drifting down into the zone. A big fish sees that as an opportunity for a meal without expending much energy. Boom.
So you think it's a matter of presentation, right place, right time?
Right place, right time. Absolutely. You got to be fishing to catch a fish.
If it goes by his face, he's going to snap, just matter whether it's a big or little.
Exactly right. Now here's, some of the Great Lakes fish, for example, when you do a lot of trolling, a lot of those guys, you've seen those big spoons and things and flashers that these guys use on these downriggers, and they're fishing for big salmon that are 100 feet deep and that type of thing. And, those are pretty large lures. They imitate the bait fish that are in the Great Lakes that the fish are going for, whether that's, LI, whether that's Cisco's or God knows what's up there, that the bait fish that these fish are eating as they're coming in to the rivers to spawn and things like that, they use these giant lures. But there is a certain time of year on the Great Lakes when they have they fish with light tackle. They fish with 8-10 pound test and smaller lures, troll them higher in the water column, and they catch just as big coho salmon and brown trout and lake trout and things like that, trolling with a lot smaller baits than they do in the fall of the year. So to answer your question, if you are imitating a food source, large or small, I'm going to guess, Kirk, if you went to Loch Raven and you hooked up a 10-inch white perch, eventually, sometime or another, a northern pike would eat that white. A northern pike big enough to eat that white perch would eat it eventually. But how long does that take? But if you're throwing a Tony out there that imitates a shiner or a small white perch or a small fry of some kind, whether that's a subsized, undersized, largemouth bass or trout or whatever it might be, you stand just as good of an opportunity to catch that same northern pike, because that's more the norm. There's a fish that is swimming slowly in a fish's mind. It's not darting around, and it's easy to track, and it's easy to strike, and boom, there you are.
I'm glad you confirmed my thoughts. I appreciate that, because so many times I'm told, you don't know what you're talking about. You want to get a big fish, you got to have a big lure and that kind of thing.
Right.
The other question I have is more philosophical, and I reflect over things over the years. And from the time I was a little boy, I mean, the earliest thing I can remember was fishing. It's all I ever wanted to do. It was just that was it.
Yep.
And No one else in the family ever did any fishing, and my son has never had any interest. He thought it was boring and this
right.
kind of thing. And I've always made sure the family came first, but fishing was the thing. And when I first see the water, I get worked up. When
yeah.
I see a fish in the shallow, it gets me going still. And I can remember the earliest things of being able to be to catch the sunnies and that kind of thing. And I can remember a Christmas morning back in the early 50s, and we had come down to visit family, and there on the Magothy, and standing on the bulkhead. I wasn't allowed out on the pier, and it was cold. I mean, miserable, and it was still right. I was using a Garcia Abu Reflex, a yellow with the black spots, and really big pickerel came right up to the lure, and I still remember that excitement and the mother's calling me to come up for dinner, and I don't want to leave the water, and finally my father standing on the hill, what the hell's wrong with you? Why don't you get up here? And everything, just always with the family on the beach, be watching the waves, trying to spot the breaks and where the bar would be and this kind of thing. And it was just it's just always been like that. And I've met a few guys that feel that way. A guy that I've used for 30 years then, and Ala Murad at Bud and Mary's, he's the same way. And we enjoy just talking, because he feels this is what he's done every day of his life, and he still gets worked up.
Sure.
But what do you think it is that triggers that in someone? As I say, where it's not that you were, that everyone else around you was doing it, but that's, what do you think it is that triggers it in us, that we get to be like that about the water and the fish?
Boy, that's a good question. That is one of the best questions I've ever had in 20-some years. What triggers that response? There's got to be some primitive genetics in there that something about it. I knew what that thing was. What triggers that?
I mean, you've said on the air that your dad liked to fish.
Oh, my dad was drag kicking and screaming into fishing. I mean, he did not fish until he was nearly 40 years old.
Oh, I always thought he was original.
No. And he basically indulged me. Now, not entirely, but he had some peer pressure. My dad was an administrator of a nursing home, and he had men who worked for him who were in the maintenance department. And there were three or four of them, and they were all avid outdoorsmen, hunters, fishermen. And, of course, they had the Outdoor Life, Field and Stream, and Sports Afield magazines sitting down in their little, I don't know if you'd call it a break area or lunch area or whatever it might be. It wasn't anything set off to the side. It was just a little table sitting there in the shop with a couple chairs around, and they'd have a break or something, they'd sit there, and of course they'd bring their magazines in and share with each other, and they'd talk about pheasant hunting and what loads to use for that. And the head guy in the maintenance department, a fellow by the name of George Lane, had a boat and started talking about fishing with my dad, and they became good friends. And even though, you know, George worked for Dad, Dad quickly kind of got involved with these guys, and it went from there to let's take a trip to Canada and fish for northern pike and walleye. And after that initial trip, Dad was all about fishing. Took me fishing. We actually fished. My first fishing trip that I remember was at the Warming Dam, what they call the Warming Dam, on the Penn State University campus in Altoona, Pennsylvania. They had an ice skating dam there, and there were sunfish and things like that. And then we were surrounded, of course, by we were close proximity to the Juniata River and Lake Raystown and Juniata and Raystown branches of the rivers that fed that dam and that type of thing. And then not far north of us was Prince Gallitzin State Park. Had a nice lake. You could take a boat and a nine horsepower motor up there. So, you know, quickly evolved into my dad buying a boat and leasing a place up on the, dock space up on the lake, and we'd fish and that type of thing. And my passion for it, whatever drove that in me, brought him along. Along with the peer pressure from the guys, you know, on the job type of thing. So
you, and I say, it was just something that it was in you that you, this is what you, this is what.
Well, I awakened something in him, because, you know, then he was more passionate about it than I was. He went on many trips that I wasn't able to go. He did the Canada trips, and he did the overnight bass fishing trips to the Coon and Gordon Lakes down on the water source for the city of Cumberland that are in Pennsylvania, and he would fish with his friends and that type of thing. But on many, 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 many occasions in the middle of the afternoon, he'd say, let's go fishing. And down the road we'd go. We'd load the station wagon up with our stuff, and we'd go, go to the local bait store and get, night crawlers and soft shell crabs. And when we, fish the river for smallmouth and whatever else, and fish late into the night after dark, come home, 1 o'clock in the morning. Many times we would head to the lake, in the summertime after work, get on the boat with a bucket of suckers or shiners or something like that, and fish for northern pike and whatever else would bite. And I tell you, it was quite a childhood coming up, and summer vacations to New Jersey, and his buddy in New Jersey, a fellow by the name of Ed Johnson that he grew up with in Pennsylvania. Ed had a good job and a nice house, and Ed had what you have and what I have. You know, he'd see the water, he'd be breaking out the fishing rod. And it didn't matter if it was, you know, freshwater trout fishing, fly fishing with a popper bug for largemouth bass on a local pond, fishing in the river, fishing on the bay, fishing off a pier. Ed was a fisherman, the fisherman's fisherman, and he loved it. And flounder fishing was another one of his passions. So he would drag my dad, you know, and I out, and we'd that would be our week on vacation. I mean, we'd fish, dad would go and fish on the Cohansie River, or we'd go fish for trout if we were there in the early season, or we'd fish for bass on some of the smallmouth or some of the largemouth ponds, and I'd catch big crappies and bluegills and bass and yellow perch. And you're bringing back a lot of stuff here, man. But whatever that passion was awakened in my dad and inspired by people like you and I who had that passion.
So. I even love that miss that smell of fish on my hands. It's just other people, they can't stand it. Just that smell of fish.
There's something fresh about it. You know, you grab a fish and you either toss it in a bag for something that you're going to eat, or you release that fish. There's nothing like that, man. Nothing like that.
Well, you're talking about the magazines with Outdoor Life and Field.
Oh, man.
I remember it being in school and in study hall and have the history book open, but inside I have the Pennsylvania Fish and Game News.
Yeah, Pennsylvania Game News. That's right.
You were caught with that. If you were caught doing something like that, you were in big trouble, but it didn't matter because that was...
That's right.
That was what I wanted to be able
exactly
to be
right.
Reading. So it's just, I just curious on what it...
Well, I wish I knew. I mean, I'm glad I have it. I'm sorry that others don't. You know, and there are people out there who have it, and, you know, it becomes unmistakable.
I know my family, they look at me as if I'm, that it's something, this is a little aberration, and they tolerate it, and they're amused by it, and they allow me to go off and pursue it.
That's right.
But they can't understand why I want to do that, and when I come back, and I'm so burned that I'm so burned that I can barely move, and I think
yeah.
It feels great. And they say, oh, you shouldn't do this.
That's right. Oh, you'll get skin cancer. Well, you know
it's
what?
It's just something about those fish and about the water, and it's just I just like I say, it's hard to put it into words.
Yeah.
And to be able to talk with someone who feels that same way, because others they just don't understand. Let's say my son was just it's boring.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I don't want to do this.
Sure.
We didn't catch it. What good is we didn't catch anything?
That's right. And, well, you know, I used to George Malone, who was one time president of the Maryland Bowhunter Society, a friend of mine. He used to say to me about hunting. He loved bow hunting. And he used to say, you know, George, you kill a bear? Nah. George, you went out west. Did you kill an elk? Nah. Did you kill? And one time he said to me, he said, Alan, he said, I've been on so many bloodless hunts. He said, I'm going to get a Christmas card from PETA this year. And it is what it is. You go fishing, you don't catch any fish, but you know what? Something always brings you back. Like you said, you see a big one in the shallow, or something jumps upstream, or, you know, you have something take a swipe at a lure and you don't know what it was. That's what keeps you going back.
And too, when I would look at somebody, I've been extremely lucky catching some really, really wonderful fish over the years. And you read up on the life, on what it takes for one of these fish to go from the egg to being a trophy.
Sure.
I mean, that fish has beaten the odds like you wouldn't believe, and yeah, I feel bad about taking the life, but at least I do put them on the wall and I can look at them and this kind of thing.
Oh, you got the memory. Yeah, you got the memory. I mean, that's exactly right.
He didn't sink to the bottom, and no one knows. But so I do that and I look at him and that kind of thing, and you think,
sure.
what that fish went through to get to be that point where he was the top dog in the lake or the river. Or
sure, well, I've been in publishing business for a long, long time, and we put the world record tautog from Eastern Shore, Virginia, on our cover one time. And doing some research on that, the fish was, you know, they estimate the fish to be 80 years old. A 26, 28-pound tautauger, whatever it was the world record. And I'm thinking there, that fish was there doing his thing, eating his, you know, making a living for 80 years,
yeah,
catching fish, and he bit the wrong bait one day.
Let's say, did he ever hit a bait other times, and he got away?
Got away, probably.
They say fish can't remember. I don't believe that. I think fish are a lot smarter and craftier than we give them credit for. Otherwise, they wouldn't get some of them wouldn't get so big. I do think they learn and they know what's going on and that kind of thing.
Very possible.
But it's just a so I say I just want to see to tell you how you thought about
all
it.
All right, buddy. I sure appreciate the call.
All right, you take care.
Stay in touch. Thanks, Kirk. Bye bye. All right, that was great. We do have to take a break. We have Carmen in BWI wants to talk about fishing, and we will get right to Carmen's call here as soon as I tell you about the Maryland Fishing Challenge. You know, the tagging for Diamond Jim for the month of August was delayed by small craft advisories. That's coming up this week. So you have till the end of this month. You'll have till, what is that, Tuesday, I guess, to catch Diamond Jim that's out there up till the end of July. And Diamond Jim for the month of July is worth $20,000. Now, he's a tagged rockfish, he or she, but we'll call him because it's Diamond Jim, don't you think? I think that's probably a good way to track, yeah. Diamond Jim is out there waiting to take your bait, and he could be worth $20,000. Now, there are lots of imposters out there. They're worth at least $500. And keep in mind, there's a $25,000 pot. Anybody who catches an imposter is going to get at least $500. But if the Diamond Jim fish isn't caught by the end of the contest, which is Labor Day, and you've caught an imposter, you could share into that portion of that $25,000, because that whole thing's going to be given away. That's how the contest works. However, all you have to do is go fishing. If you catch Diamond Jim, that would be a rockfish with a green spaghetti tag sticking out of its belly. If you catch one of those, call the number on the tag, wait for DNR to see the fish, and you could be in. You could win great prizes like a boat, motor, and trailer package from Bass Pro Shop, a vacation from the World Fishing Network, thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center. All you have to do is go fishing. www.dnr.maryland.gov for all the details in the 2012 Maryland Fishing Challenge, this year honoring Maryland's own Lefty Cray. That's www.dnr.maryland.gov. Are you feeling lucky? Maybe. All right. Let's talk about Papa John's Farm. Corn on the cob. You know, these hot days, there's nothing like standing over a hot stove, steaming up a bunch of corn on the cob, boiling water, dumping in those corn ears, and you get them out, and they're steaming hot, and you slather them down with butter and a big pile of salt on there. Nothing like it. Couldn't be better for your health. A big old pile of butter and a pile of salt on that corn on the cob. That's the way I like it. I don't know how you like it or not, but you can grill corn on the cob. You can steam it with crabs like the Schillinger family does. You know, layer crabs, layer seasoning, and then you get up to the top and you put your corn right on top of your crabs and you season it up. Oh, it's all good. Well, the Schillinger family at Papa John's Farm would like to invite you to check out their corn on the cob and their tasty tomatoes and their delicious juicy watermelons and cantaloupes and everything else. At their enormous produce barn, their own tasty super sweet corn and homegrown tomatoes are ready for you. Their squash, zucchini, peppers, onions, green beans, cucumbers, mouthwatering cantaloupes, and sweet, sweet watermelon. Papa John's Farm, I-97, exit 12, 8065, New Cut Road in Severn. That's 410-969-8810. Papa John's Farm is open every day, Monday to Saturday from 9 to 7, Sunday 9 to 6. That phone number again is 410-969-8810. Schillinger's Papa John's Farm. It'll grow on you.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
This is Mark Levin inviting you to join me every weeknight from 7 to 9 with the most powerful names in talk. Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowards. Don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks. Make 'em be doctors and lawyers and such. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. They'll never stay home and they're always alone, even with someone they love.
Carmen, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well.
What's up?
Well, I'm driving to the airport, about to get to the drop my rental car off, and I live in Maryland for 30-some years. I've lived in Arizona for about 8.
Okay.
I turn on the radio and hear this show, and I realize how great of a state this is for outdoors. As I've gone to Arizona, I've learned a lot about hunting big game, you know, elk and pronghorn and black bear. It's been outstanding, but then I sit here and think to myself, and I've thought this many times, you've got to drive really far everywhere you go out west to
fish. That's right.
In a hunt, and there are so many places. Some you just mentioned, a place like the Savage River and some of the limestone streams up in like PA, places that were an hour and a half or less from northern Baltimore County where I live. I just never got in the car and went to, because I figured I'd just fish right here, and I really regret not taking a couple road trips like that.
Sure.
Because they're so close. Because now, honest to God, I drive 2 hours one way to put my feet in a trout stream.
Sure. And Arizona is, I think Arizona is first or second in the country as far as boat registrations per capita, that type of thing. I mean, it's not a tremendous population of people in Arizona, but almost all of them own boats.
You're exactly right. I live pretty close to what's called Bartlett Lake.
Right.
On any weekend, you see those boats go by. And it's so, you know, but still, even then, I live very close to Bartlett Lake, according to what people think, but I'm still 20 miles from it.
Sure.
And so everything's...
Northern Baltimore County, you drive 10 minutes and you're on the Gunpowder, or you're at Pretty Boy, or you're at Lock Raven. I mean, you know, there's all those opportunities when you live in the county like that. You know, I'm 10 minutes from Liberty and 20 minutes from Piney Run.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And some of these streams that I see them in national magazines.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there in Arizona thinking, man, I'd like to go trout fishing today. I love the Gunpowder. I love fishing the Gunpowder.
Yeah.
And to find anything like it, and I'm not, there's not big rivers in Arizona. There's one or two. They're pretty much streams as well. I literally, the closest one, 2 hours one way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's the perception of, it's great fishing. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it takes more time. It takes more gas. It takes all those things. So anyway,
sure.
I was trying to maybe motivate somebody out there who's thinking, hey, one day I need to get out to Western Maryland, to say, hey, it really isn't far at all.
Right, exactly.
Within a day.
Easy. Exactly.
So, you know, see something else, do something else.
Sure. Yeah, you're exactly right. So
that's it.
That's it, man. Well, I've said for 20-some years, this is a land of opportunity. We've got the ocean on the East Coast. We've got tuna and dolphin and marlin and you name it, everything that goes along with that. Yeah, we got the entire Chesapeake Bay here within our borders. We've got the Potomac River. We got all the rivers that feed the bay, all the great rivers that are tidal and have everything in them, you know, bass fishing. We've got all the lakes and ponds and streams, some of the finest fishing for trout, as you mentioned, in the world. And here we are in Maryland, and what do we want to do? We want to moan because our, you know, hunting license costs us $40, or we want to whine because our fishing license costs us $20 or whatever it is. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. Go.
You're dead right about that. And, well, the funniest part about it, too, I'll tell you this, these native Arizona guys I'm friends with, and I love, it's fun. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
It's different, but they have a perception of everybody back east as living in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
They just don't have the viewpoint on the outdoors back east as being anything. They just don't.
Well, it's the same as people who live out in Western Maryland. What is their view of California? You know, L.A. and San Francisco.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't understand what tremendous opportunities are available. There's, you know, there's elk hunting, there's bear hunting, there's big game, there's you know, everything out there. But, you know, it's all centered around you know, L.A., San Francisco corridor. And, you know, you just don't understand. Like Illinois, some of the finest whitetail hunting in the world, great bird hunting. And, you know, everybody thinks Chicago. You know,
well, so. You know, Arizona is a great example, too, as I'm saying it right now. I think unless you really research and look into it, it is the best state for trophy elk.
Oh, the biggest elk in the world, absolutely. Yeah.
I see the things. You go up, you try to find them, you can see them. And it's true about the antelope.
Yeah.
The coos white-tailed deer, which is an amazing deer to hunt. It's just remarkable that the game, the trophy potential out there.
Right.
It's just a phenomenal place to be able to draw a tag. Now, that's the whole issue, drawing tags.
Yeah.
Me 3 years to figure out its own, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I got to get moving because I'm heading back.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate the call. Listen, you can listen to the Outdoors and Radio Show and bring home memories every day. Every Saturday if you want. I'm on, you know, you can catch me on WCBM.com live, or you can listen to the podcast anytime during the week, 24/7, 365. And that's right. Either on WCBM website or check out my website, ellisoutdoors.com.
Will do.
Thanks, Carmen. Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks. Bye-bye. See ya. There he goes. 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680. That's the way we like to do it. We like to talk to people who are interested and concerned. All right, a couple things came out this week. The proposal for the waterfowl seasons is on the table, late waterfowl seasons. And we have brand new this year. We have an extension of the waterfowl Atlantic population, migratory birds, migratory geese. The season goes to 50 days. That is the proposal. Everything is in line. It's been approved by the Regulatory Commission, everything else. The only folks that have to approve it are the citizens of the state of Maryland and the Wildlife Advisory Commission. And we're looking at a 50-day Canada goose season, with the days actually extending from the end of January into February, another 5 days in February, which is unprecedented. Also, for you diver duck hunters, bluebills, the limit has increased in the proposal from two birds to four birds, four bluebills. Yes, sir. So you can kill your canvas back and still take a couple more of those great bluebills with that exciting hunting. There are two youth days, one at the beginning of the season, one at the end of the season, are proposed. Last year it was misunderstood about the 2 days, and they were on concurrent Saturdays, or consecutive Saturdays. I always get those two confused, concurrent and consecutive. Two consecutive Saturdays as opposed to one early and one late. Well, we have one early and one late proposed this year, which came up in the public meetings last year. All this will be on the street here very soon and on the Maryland Hunting Quarterly website. It'll be out there in print next week. We take delivery on the magazines on Tuesday, and we'll start putting them out next week, and then we'll be distributing those Maryland Hunting Quarterly magazines. The other thing that's going on is I mentioned last week, I kind of hinted that I had news on the 2011 DNA-based bear study, that the numbers were up. Well, the numbers came out this week in a press release. The estimated population for black bears in Maryland is 701. And 701 bears as opposed to 362 in the 2005 survey, basically a 94% increase in the population of black bears. The population per square mile went to, I'm not looking at it, I'm doing this from memory, almost 65 bears per 100 square miles in bear territory. That's 65 bears in a 10 by 10 mile area. Is the estimate of the population and bear density here in Maryland. That's up from about 37, 38 bears per 100 square miles 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So that's quite an increase. The lottery is open now. You can go online to the DNR website and catch the bear lottery. If you need the direct link, just email me, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, and I'll send that to you. Or those of you who are not computer literate, you will have an opportunity here at the end of August to register by phone for the lottery. It's a $15 non-refundable permit application fee that gets you in the drawing. If you are not going to be able to hunt but want to put a preference point into effect, that simply means that you get a second chance in the lottery. You still pay your $15 even if you're not going to hunt and put in for the permit. You have that option to opt out of the actual hunting opportunity, but you can put in for the permit. There is, of course, a requirement to have a bear license or have a hunting license along with your bear permit. And the quota for bears this year has gone from what used to be like 75, 80 animals up to 110. 80 to 110 bears is the target for the week-long season. They will more than likely stop the season when you hit 80 or 85 on, I'm going to guess, day four. But that's the chance you take that there are other successful hunters out there, and you could be too. But the other part of the program is that I don't necessarily agree with, and a lot of people don't, but the first 25% of the permits are weighted towards people in bear country, or are weighted towards hunters who apply in Garrett and Allegheny County. So there's 340 permits. That's, I believe, about 80-some. How many is that? 80 couple, 84, 85 permits are preferential to people in Garrett and Allegheny counties, which leaves 255 for the rest of us, which is five less than we've had in the last few years. We're 260 permits there last year. So, and everybody had a shot at them. So there you go. That's kind of the basics on the bear permit thing. Like I said, if you'd like more information, just give us a call here, and we'll give you all that information if you like. 410-922-6680 is our phone number, 1-800-WCBM-680. That's also our phone number, 800-922-6680. We'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to talk about anything that we talked about so far, I will tell you this, that the draft proposal, the draft treaty failed with the Committee for United Nations, and there will be no arms trade treaty driven by the United Nations. The National Rifle Association is taking credit for killing that, and they may well have had some influence in doing that simply by staying on top of the situation and informing their constituency and informing members of Congress. So we'll talk more about that if you like. But right now it's time for me to tell you about Bay Linux of Glen Burnie. Spray-on bedliners. Bay Linux of Glen Burnie is the only authorized Linux dealer in Glen Burnie and proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linux spray-on bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. Now, Linux bedliners completely seal out rust. They have a durable non-slip surface. They reduce noise and vibration. Linux bedliners resist most chemicals and acids and fuels. They protect against impact, and they clean up just like new at your local car wash. Now, Bay Linux of Glen Burnie now offers Linux protection that comes to you. The Linux mobile unit can come to your farm, business, or job site and apply the Linux coating to your trailers, your tanks, your equipment, your secondary containment, styrofoams, plastic, anything that needs protection. The new Linex Extra is fortified with DuPont Kevlar. That utilizes the paint coat, and that will match your liner to your vehicle for color finish. That's really nice, and provides Kevlar protection to your truck bed as well. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bed liner from Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Visit them online at baylinex.com. Yeah, call Bobby Hawkins, 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199. Find out how you can receive a $30 Bass Pro Shop gift card just by mentioning Ellis Outdoors or the Outdoorsman Radio Show. That's Bay Linux of Glen Burnie. Now, more than just bedliners. I'd like to tell you about Fishbones Bait and Tackle. 4729 Mountain Road in Pasadena, 4729. Take Route 100 all the way to the end, head towards Gibson Island on Mountain Road. 2.5 miles on the right-hand side beside the Shell station is Fishbones Bait and Tackle. A large selection of live bait, fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, crab bait, and those great crab steamers that I tell you about, made out of stainless steel with a basket and a lid. They have three sizes, half bushel, 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 and a half. So that's three sizes, half bushel, 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 and a half. That it will be the last crab steamer you ever need to buy, and Fishbones Bait and Tackle has them. They're made right here in Maryland. They have Fishbones' name on the lid, and you'll be glad you did. Fishbones Bait and Tackle, 4729 Mountain Road, Pasadena. That phone number for an up-to-date fishing report is 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire.
Don't miss the best of Rush Limbaugh on Rush's Weekend Review every Saturday afternoon from 12 to 3 on the most powerful names in talk, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
But I'll take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get about all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade sitting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool.
All right. We have to remember the late Sheriff Taylor, who where we first heard that song. Salt Lake City. A man spotted dressed in a goat suit among a herd of wild goats in the mountains of northern Utah has been identified as a hunter preparing for Canadian archery season. After a hiker spotted the so-called goat man on July 15th in the mountains above Ogden, about 40 miles north of Salt Lake City, wildlife officials said they wanted to talk to the person to be certain he was aware of the dangers as the hunting season approached. They speculated he might have been an extreme wildlife enthusiast who just wanted to get as close as possible to the goats. A few days after the spotting, state wildlife authorities received an anonymous call from an agitated man who said, "Leave the goat man alone. He's done nothing wrong." This week, however, the mystery was solved. Phil Douglas of the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources said he received a call from 57-year-old Southern California hunter who explained he was merely trying out his goat suit in preparation for a mountain goat hunt in Canada next year. He gave me enough details about the area and the situation that made me feel confident that this was him, Douglas said on Tuesday. In talking to him, I felt he was very knowledgeable, very experienced hunter. He's hunted internationally. This wildlife official, Douglas, added, "My concern all along was that this person needed to understand the risks, and certainly after talking to him, I felt he was doing the best he could to understand and mitigate those risks. He was simply preparing for a hunt." The man did not identify himself, noting the hunter was concerned for his safety after widespread media coverage of the sighting first reported in the Standard Examiner of Ogden. A fellow by the name of Cody Creighton, 33-year-old yuppie who was hiking, spotted the goat man on July 15th. He said he came across a herd but noticed something odd about one goat that was trailing behind the rest. "I thought maybe it was injured," Creighton said. "It just looked odd." He said he pulled out binoculars, probably to watch Tweety birds with, to get a closer look at the goats about 200 yards away and was shocked. The man appeared to be acting like a goat while wearing a crudely made costume which had fake horns and a cloth mask with cut-out eye holes. Well, what do you think he would have as far as eye holes are concerned? "We were the only ones around for miles," he said. "It was real creepy. It was creepy." The Yuppie Douglas said that 60 permits, oh no, the wildlife guy, Douglas said 60 permits will be issued for goat hunting and season in that area, which began in September. He had worried the man in the goat suit might be accidentally shot or could be attacked by a real goat. He said the hunter described the goat costume as merely a hooded painter's uniform and a fleece. Douglas said, that's creepy. Douglas said wildlife officials encourage archery hunters to practice their skills and get themselves in position where they can make a clean and humane shot. That's exactly what he was doing, said Douglas. There are laws that require people to wear hunter orange during rifle hunts, but people do wear camo during archery hunts. Duh. While it's not legal to dress up like the animal you're trying to kill, Douglas said it's not illegal to dress up like the animal you're trying to kill. Douglas said it's still dangerous. It's unwise. It's just a bad idea all the way around to do that kind of thing. Well, maybe. Maybe. But there is a company out there called Be the Decoy. We saw their display at the ATA show a couple of years ago. And that was they had things like, you know, hats that looked like pronghorn antelope, you know. They had the actual outfit. A guy walked around the entire ATA show in a deerskin outfit with antlers on his head. I don't know how successful that company is, but if you'd like to check it out, you can check out Be the Decoy. And that is the website, Be the Decoy, and they have a system for primarily antelope hunting, but they do have what they call speed goat hats, which you wear this little hat when you're out hunting antelope. And you know what? They have a deer hat, which I sure as hell wouldn't wear. And then on their website, they have Goat Man in Utah is the hunter. So this guy had made his own goat outfit, and he was being the decoy. But if you'd like to check out BeTheDecoy.com, and wear your elk hat or your deer hat or whatever you want to wear while you're hunting, that's fine. I'll tell you what, the antelope hunt isn't a bad deal. We actually, when I killed my antelope last September, we killed the doe antelope. We actually got behind a Montana decoy, which is just a cutout cloth decoy made to look like an antelope, and walked up within range in open ground to the doe antelope that I killed. And that was the only way that we were gonna fool her, because she was on open country. We couldn't stalk her. There was no cover to stalk her with. We tried to, you know, sidehill her a little bit, but she kept climbing. And she was probably 300 yards away when we went back to the truck, and the guide got the decoy. He got the decoy and popped it up, and he got behind it, said, "Get behind me," and we looked like a little train going up through there. And walked right up to, well, not right up to, but we got certainly within range, 190 yards, nice killable range, of the antelope. And she was watching the decoy, and I laid down and took my position on the ground and put the gun on the tripod, and it was all over. So that was very effective. So anyway, there we are. I keep yakking here. And the reason I keep yakking and talking about this stuff is we don't have any phone callers. So if you want to keep me from yakking, give us a call and talk about what you want to talk about. 410-922-6680 is our phone number. 1-800-922-6680, 410-922-6680. Time now for me to tell you about the DNR Fishing Challenge. That's right. That's right. There are more than 60 species of fish in the Chesapeake Bay and the tidal rivers, and freshwater and offshore, off the coast there, that are eligible to become citation fish. 60 species. That's right. And from now through Labor Day, all you have to do is go fishing. You could win great prizes like the grand prize boat, motor, and trailer rig from Bass Pro Shop, thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center, maybe even a vacation from the World Fishing Network. What you got to do if you catch one of those citation size fish is certify your catch at your local tackle store, your citation center. You can go online for more details at dnr.maryland.gov. That's dnr.maryland.gov. You can go on lsoutdoors.com. You can go to the podcast page or on the homepage. Click right on the Fishing Challenge icon there. It'll take you right to the site for all the details. This year's 2012 Maryland Fishing Challenge honors Maryland's own Lefty Cray. You can get all the details again, www.dnr.maryland.gov. And the 2012 Maryland Fishing Challenge Lots of great prizes. And don't forget, Diamond Jim's out there. From now to the end of the month, he's worth $20,000 with lots of imposters. Tagged rockfish. If you catch one, don't pull that tag out. Call the number on the tag, and you may just have won a $20,000 prize. After next Tuesday, $25,000. Are you feeling lucky? I hope so. And we're talking about goose season. We're talking about an extended season, 50 days for Atlantic population migratory geese this year as a proposal. It's all been approved. The public meeting is coming up, and we'll have that for you here shortly. Well, let me see if I have it now. Let me give you the date. It's at Chesapeake College. What did I do with that? What did I do with the dates? There it is. Chesapeake College. That will be August 13th at 7 p.m. August 13th at 7 p.m., Chesapeake College and Y Mills. And that's where you can make your comments on the waterfowl seasons that are proposed. But it goes along with that, our Sean Mann calls. Now, Sean Mann, SeanMann.com, SeanMann.com, is where you can view all the calls and hear all the calls that are manufactured by Sean Mann, right there in Easton, Maryland. Sean's homegrown on the Eastern Shore, world goose calling champion, 1985, went on to be champion of champions. More world goose calling championships have been won with Sean Mann calls than any other brand. And you, too, can own the Eastern Shoreman. That's a great one to start out with. If you've never called a goose before and you want to learn, extended season this year. We got the early season coming up September. 8-goose limit on that. That's great. If you want to learn to call, you can do so between now and September 1st. All you got to do is go to SeanMann.com. Look for that Eastern Shoreman. That's the one you want, the Eastern Shoreman goose call. That'll teach you very quickly how to at least make a couple of sounds that sound similar to geese, but the call is capable of reproducing all the sounds of a Canada goose, and we invite you to go visit that website. That's SeanMann.com for the Eastern Shoreman Goose Call. That's right. That's right. Oh, the toll-free number, 800-345-4539. Write that down. Toll-free, 800-345-4539 or SeanMann.com. You'll love learning how to call geese. It's a little frustrating, but you get in a truck and, you know, it's not distracted driving. Only distracted if you're texting. If you're drinking a coffee and eating a donut, it's not distracting. If you're blowing a goose call while you're going down the road, it's not distracted driving. Just using your cell phone. Remember that. 800-345-4539, SeanMann.com. That's it.